ॐ गणेशमिनन्दस्य जनजनसलकय चक्षुसमिलितान् येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टां स्थपितं येन विद्यते स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददति सकलनाथिका. पञ्चकपटुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यैव च प्रीतरं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Beginning the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, I wanted to read something that Prabhupada wrote, something very simple he wrote in his summary of this chapter, a simple line, or the first paragraph rather. Throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, there are descriptions of 10 subject matters, including creation, subsequent creation, and the planetary systems. Sukadev Goswami, the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, has already described creation, subsequent creation, and the planetary systems in the 3rd, 4th, and 5th cantos. Now in the 6th canto, which consists of 19 chapters, he will describe Pushanam, or protection by the Lord. So this canto is a very wonderful canto, very great in scope. And the theme running through it, through each part of the third canto, and there's the first part, the first three chapters, are about Ajamil, the story of Ajamil, which is very, very, very important. Srila Prabhupada lectured on these chapters many times. Very, very, very important. And then after Ajamil, we hear about the Hansaguya prayers, about Daksha. Where did we hear about Daksha last? Or actually, two times we heard about Daksha previously. Anyone remember where? Fourth canto. What in the first part of the first canto, the opening chapters were about Daksha. And Daksha had his head cut off. And later on, at the end of the fourth canto, we heard that Daksha was born as the son of the Prachetas, illustrious Daksha. Born of the illustrious Prachetas, born in the family of Prithumaraj, born in the family of Uttanapad. So there'll be a continuation of the story of Daksha, the Hansaguya prayers, and other elements of the story of Daksha. Then after that, we'll hear about Vritrasura, an incredible pastime, where a demon is a devotee, an exalted devotee, more exalted, more detached, even than Indra, the king of heaven. And prior to that, in time, and after it in the sequence of the Bhagavatam, is the story of Chitraketu Maharaj, because in Chitraketu Maharaj's next life, he became Vritrasura, and after the pastime of Vritrasura was spoken, then Prikin Maharaj asked, how did such a great devotee, why was he in such a demonic birth, horrible birth, fighting with the demigods? So because of that question, the story of Vritrasura's previous birth was told, and that is the story of Chitraketu Maharaj. And then finally, there is the Payovrata, or Pumsa Stavana, how Diti vows to kill Indra, and the result of that, the Pumsa Sava ritualistic ceremony. Very wonderful stories and pastimes. Very wonderful, very heart-touching, very deep, deeply philosophical, and the stories are quite charming as well in each of these. And throughout all of these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pastimes in the 19 chapters of the sixth canto, the underlying theme will be Poshanam, or the protection of the Lord. As Prabhupada mentioned, there are 10 subject matters. Atra sarva vishargas cha stanam poshanam uttaya. So poshanam again means the protection of the Lord. So now we'll begin. Now, the last canto before the sixth canto? No, it's not going to stimulate anyone's thinking powers. You know the answer. I knew you knew it. But what was the last chapter about? Does anyone remember?
Yeah.
We had a tour through different hells, and it was horrible. Actually horrible. Hearing what happens if one performs unfortunate, sinful, selfish, cruel activities, possessive activities, self-centered around the body and the family. One suffers for these because necessarily in all activities that are selfish, self-centered, one commits violence to others. One can't avoid violence in this material world. And one is implicated by everything that one does. One is implicated. There is a reaction to everything done in this world. Unless one does it without selfish motive. But otherwise, reaction. Every breath we take, every morsel of food we put in our mouths, every step we take, there are reactions for these things. And for good deeds done, there are positive reactions. Pious deeds done, there are positive actions that elevate one and increase one's enjoyment. And the negative reactions for sinful activities cause future suffering. Now, that the last chapter was about these hellish conditions, and the chapters just prior to that were descriptions of the universe, the higher planets where there is incredible enjoyment, and these lower planets where there is incredible suffering. The structure of the universe had been described, and now Maharaj Prickett is going to ask a question. It's interesting to keep in mind what Maharaj Prickett's situation was, and what was that situation? What are the circumstances surrounding his sitting and hearing from Sukadev Goswami? What are those circumstances?
Never
leave
the
body. Yeah.
He's
going to
die.
Yes. So it's interesting to note what a dying man asks about. In fact, that was the question, the first question that he asked Sukadev Goswami back in the end of the first canto. He asked, what is that subject matter? What should one do? What should one focus one's mind upon? What should one hear about if one is soon to die? And Sukadev Goswami, when he heard that question, he said, not only is the answer to that question glorious, but the question itself, which evokes that glorious answer, is itself glorious. What should one do if one is face to face with death? And actually, he had 7 days to prepare. Sometimes we get several months to prepare, and sometimes we may get a year's notice to prepare for death. And usually though, we don't, even though we may have a year to live, we don't know when that year begins. And no one knows, regardless of the, generally speaking, no one knows, regardless of the, of how old we are. We don't know if we started our last year yet, or our last week. That's one thing to keep in mind. Maharaj Prickett was 7 days, less than 7 days now, when he started hearing the Bhagavatam. It was about 7 days, but now it's less than 7 days to the end of his life. And then also keep in mind what he's just heard about the universe, the higher planets and the hellish planets, where there's so much suffering. And here's what he asks. Maharaj Prickett said, "O my Lord, O Sukadev Goswami, you have already described in the second canto the path of liberation, Nivritti Marg, in the second canto, in the first, second, and third chapters, first and second chapters especially, this Nivritti Marg is described, wherein one realizes or recognizing what life is about, the purpose of life, one gives up all sense gratification. Just he maintains himself and he focuses his mind on the Supreme. He gives up all, or as much as practical, connection with matter. And practicing either yoga or just wandering around like a mendicant, viewing the whole material world as part of the universal body, or through practice of the Lord, Vishwarupa, or practicing yoga and gradually elevating himself in yoga, till even as described in the second canto, one can even leave his body at will through yoga. Imagine being so detached from the body and so not only convinced, but realized as consciousness, realizing oneself not as consciousness, but as a soul with consciousness, with one's consciousness being the symptom of the fact that he's a soul. Just being so detached that one has no attachment, only detachment for the body. Right now, when we think of who we are, we identify with the body and with the mind. Especially we identify with the body. That is called maya, or illusion, due to false ego, ahankar. But yogis, through the practice of yoga, can make their consciousness so fine, so subtle, that their identification is not at all on the body. And depending upon how expert they are in yoga, they will either identify with the mind and the subtle body, and they can practically speaking travel over the universe and taste all the different delights that the universe has to offer. Or they can gradually elevate themselves. Elevating oneself in consciousness means purifying the consciousness, which means making the consciousness more subtle, which means purification, making it subtle. What does that mean? It means getting rid of all the foreign elements, that which adulterates the consciousness, which makes it more gross. Getting rid of all those, subtler and subtler, and depending upon how subtle or gross one's consciousness is, one will have a different sphere to live in. And this we see even in this world. Those who have, even human beings, those who have gross consciousness, they look a particular way, they eat a particular way, they'll dress a particular way, they have different types of sensual enjoyments. And they're completely different, diametrically opposed to someone with subtle, refined consciousness. The way they talk will be different. Everything will be different. The consciousness will dictate. So through yoga, One purifies, removes the impurities from the consciousness, and one can elevate oneself to the degree, to finally, when one removes false ego, one can enter the spiritual world, go beyond the material universe. So this is the path of Nivritti-marga, giving up everything extraneous, living not for material enjoyment, but for purification and spiritual life. So Maharaj Pickett said, O Sukadev Goswami, you have already described in the second canto the path of liberation, Nivritti-marga. By following that path, one is certainly elevated gradually to the highest planetary system, Brahmaloka, from which one is promoted to the spiritual world along with Lord Brahma. Thus one's repetition of birth and death in the material world ceases. So this is the ultimate goal, practically speaking, in the material world for a yogi, or on the path of Nivritti-marga, or the path of spiritual elevation through the gradual process of yoga. That one can elevate himself further and further, tapaloka, janaloka, mahaloka, satyaloka. Satyaloka is brahmaloka. And then when one's consciousness is so fine and subtle, he lives on brahmaloka for millions and millions and millions of years. Practically, we can't even imagine what these higher planets are like, because when we think of places where there is more enjoyment, we may think of the places, you know, according to our own calculation, what enjoyment is. Someone may think that's, you know, all you can drink all the alcohol you want and they don't charge you. That's what it's like on the higher planetary systems. Or you have an unlimited stomach, and you can just keep on eating and eating and eating and eating and eating, or unlimited this or unlimited that on a gross level. But that's not at all what these higher planets are like. Everything is very, very subtle, based on the deepest possible peace. It's like every day at certain times, the modes of material nature affect us differently. Sometimes the mode of ignorance attacks us, and what happens? You get sleepy. And sometimes the mode of goodness affects us, and what happens? Yeah. I can't even answer. I have no experience of that. But you become peaceful, self-satisfied, and suddenly everything seems right. Something like that, but multiplied thousands and thousands of times in depth. Because these planets in the higher planetary systems are based on the mode of goodness. Very, incredibly deep, deep satisfaction and peace. But it's in the material world. But very subtle, fine. That means little, no ignorance, practically. No passion, practically. Just goodness, material goodness. And then from there, the yogic path leads one to further purifying one's consciousness and even getting rid of the most subtle of material contaminations, which is the false ego. Right? One identifies with something material. And then, what happens? One can transfer oneself to the spiritual world along with Brahma at the end when the universal destruction takes place. So thus, if one does that, one leaves the material world, because one can leave the material world because one has no false ego, no identification with the body or mind. So Sukadeva is saying this, you've described that. Here's just a little bit from Prabhupada's purport. Prichit Maharaj was astonished that the living entities in the conditional stage do not accept the path of liberation. It was so real to him. He was astonished, shocked. they do not accept the path of liberation, devotional service, instead of suffering in so many hellish conditions. This is the symptom of a Vaishnava. Vansha kalpa tu vyascha kripa sindhu vaiva cha. A Vaishnava is an ocean of mercy. Paradukka dukhi. He is unhappy because of the unhappiness of others. Therefore, Prakrit Maharaj, being compassionate towards the conditioned souls suffering in hellish life, because he's just heard that they're in hell, he suggested that Sukadeva Goswami continued describing the path of liberation, which he had explained in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the second canto. Because he had heard about the hellish life and his heart was breaking with compassion. These people, they're suffering so much because of their sinful activities they've committed. So please, now he's saying, speak about the path of liberation. He's going to develop his question still further. Text 2. O great sage Sukadeva Goswami, unless the living entity is freed from the infection of the material modes of nature, he receives different types of bodies in which to enjoy or suffer. And according to the body, he is understood to have various inclinations. The body dictates the inclinations that one has. That means, because the body is our karma, and we receive the body, our karma, according to our activities, and that fills us with a particular type of desires. Our birth is dictated by our karma, and that means, and according to the body we have, the senses we have, the mentality we have, we'll have different desires. Clearly so. By following these inclinations, so if we follow our karma, the inclinations born of our karma, he traverses the path called Pravritti Marg, by which one may be elevated into the heavenly planets, as you have already described in the third canto. So in the third canto, there's some description about the Pravritti Marg, or trying to enjoy in the material world through Shastra, to elevate oneself. There's some description of the path of fruitive activities in the 32nd chapter, in Kapila Muni's teachings. The path of fruitive activities, how someone comes into this world and he's filled with desires. Everyone, practically speaking, is filled with desires. But when one is very young, there is no situation where one can manifest the desires. Just like a seed planted in the ground. If many different kinds of plants, with the seeds of many different plants are put in the ground, for a while, all the little stalks may look the same that come up. The seedlings, the sprouts may look the same. But later on, when they develop and begin giving their fruits, they look completely different, their fruits and flowers. So similarly, all little kids may seem to be the same, but by the time that they reach their youth and adulthood, their individuality, which means their individual karma, starts blossoming, flowering, manifesting. And then you see that some are fruits and some are nuts, or whatever. So some, the pious ones, they'll want to enjoy in one way, in a pious way, a religious way. And an impious one will want to enjoy in an irreligious way. But the same basic material enjoyment motive will be in the heart. So this is Pravritti Marg, not the path of liberation, but the path of enjoyment. So that's been described, and if one is religious, one can purify his consciousness and enjoy on the heavenly planet. This has been described previously. So he's described, some, due to their inclinations, will go to hell, some will go to heaven due to their actions and inclinations. Verse 3. You have also described at the end of the fifth canto the varieties of hellish life that result from impious activities. And you have described in the fourth canto the first manvantar, which was presided over by Swayambhu Vimanu, the son of Lord Brahma. My dear Lord, you have described the dynasties and characteristics of King Priyavrata and King Uttanapad. This was in the third and fourth canto. The Supreme Personality of Godhead created this material world with various universes, planetary systems, planets and stars, with varied lands, seas, oceans, mountains, rivers, gardens, and trees, all with different characteristics. They are divided among this planet Earth, the luminaries in the sky, and the lower planetary system. So that was very much the subject of the fifth canto that we just heard. You have very clearly described these planets and the living entities who live on them. So all these, we had heard, with all the various manifestations, all came from Krishna. Aham savasya prabhavo mataksavam pravartate itti matva bhajante mam buddhabhava samanvita. That Krishna is the source of everything. Everything comes from him. Mata parataram na anyat. Everything rests on him. Sutre maniginaiva. Just like pearls are strung on a thread. All comes from the Lord. So all this has been described, and that was the purpose of describing this great universe. How everything comes from the Lord. So if the universe comes from the Lord, and so many universes come from the Lord, how great he is. But this isn't yet his question. Now he asks, O greatly fortunate and opulent Sukadev Goswami, now kindly tell me how human beings may be saved from having to enter hellish conditions in which they suffer terrible pains. Now, remember, he's about to die within 3 or 4 days. And he's asking about how others can be saved from suffering. So therefore, in the previous verse, Prabhupada quoted Vanshakalpatubhyascha kripa sindhu bhaeva cha, that a Vaishnava is very, very soft-hearted. A Vaishnava is concerned with the suffering of others. Even in the most difficult circumstances for himself, just see his concern. So this itself is glorious. It is wonderful. What a heart. This is the heart of a Vaishnava. How can they be saved from suffering these hellish conditions? Here is Prabhupada's purport. In the 26th chapter of the fifth canto, that's the last chapter about hellish planets, Sukadeva Goswami has explained that people who commit sinful acts are forced to enter hellish planets and suffer. Now Maharaj Prickett, being a devotee, is concerned with how this can be stopped. A Vaishnava is paradukha dukhi. In other words, he has no personal troubles. But he is very unhappy to see others in trouble. Prahlad Maharaj said, My Lord, I have no personal problems, for I have learned how to glorify your transcendental qualities and thus enter a trance of ecstasy. I do have a problem, however, for I am simply thinking of these rascals and fools who are busy with maya sukha, temporary happiness, without knowledge of devotional service unto you. This is the problem faced by a Vaishnava. Once Prabhupada was walking by, it possibly was a golf course maybe, or something like that, or something that reminded him of this point. And he said, we are thinking 24 hours a day how we can engage people, how so that they will use their time properly to make spiritual advancement. And they, Prabhupada continued, are thinking simply how to waste time. Involved with maya sukha, temporary illusory happiness without no knowledge of devotional service unto you. This is the problem faced by a Vaishnava. Because a Vaishnava fully takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he personally has no problems. But because he is compassionate towards the fallen conditioned souls, he is always thinking of plans to save them from their hellish life in this body and the next. Pariksit Maharaj therefore anxiously wanted to know from Sukadeva Goswami how humanity can be saved from gliding down to hell. Sukadeva Goswami had already explained how people enter hellish life, and he could also explain how they could be saved from it. Intelligent man must take advantage of these instructions. Unfortunately, however, the entire world is lacking Krishna consciousness, and therefore people are suffering from the grossest ignorance and do not even believe in a life after this one. To convince them of their next life is very difficult because they have become almost mad in their pursuit of material enjoyment. Nevertheless, our duty, the duty of all sane men, is to save them. Maharaj Pariksit is the representative of one who can save them. Text 7. Here, so that question is, how can they be saved? He just heard about this hell. So many different kinds of hell, so much kinds of suffering based on the various sinful activities that people commit in this world, selfish activities, cruel activities, heartless activities. So Pariksit Maharaj is asking how they can be freed from this suffering in hell. Now Sukadeva Goswami explains, "My dear king, if before one's next death, whatever impious acts one has performed in this life with his mind, words, and body, whichever acts one has performed impiously that are not counteracted through proper atonement according to the description of the Manusamhita and other Dharma Shastras, one will certainly enter the hellish planets after death and undergo terrible suffering, as I have previously described to you." So what is his answer? But since we in this life have acted impiously, we've done so many things, and practically speaking, no one knows how much impiety they have enacted. How many living entities have we caused pain to in this life? Calculate. We can't. How many, starting from the most innocent, just by living, how many breaths of air have we taken and killed different types of germs? How many steps we've taken and stepped on ants? How many times unconsciously we've gone when some bug has bitten us? Just, and those are the innocent ones. How many animals, spare ribs, have we eaten? Legs, arms, how much pain we have caused? How many people's hearts have we hurt by the way we've acted and treated them? Words we've spoken unkindly. How many people have we cheated? How many times have we lit a fire and even unconsciously burnt so many living entities in that fire? The list of each one of our impious activities is practically limitless, and yet we have to suffer for that. We have to get reactions for that. So Sukadeva Goswami's answer is that in our life we have to atone. How much ungratefulness have we shown? So many impious activities. So before we die, before our end, the end of this body, we have to atone, Sukadeva Goswami. We have to counterbalance the impious activities we've done, the sinful activities we've done, we have to balance those through the prescribed methodologies which are given in the Dharma Shastras. There are many 80 authorized scriptures, such as Manusamhita, which are Dharma Shastras. They tell religious activities, and they have sections that explain the counteraction of these impious activities. And when you read in these scriptures, like Manusamhita, what a sinful activity is. I mean, how many things unconsciously we've done, without ignorantly, without knowledge that it was even bad. So he's saying we have to counteract each of those. And there's what's called the Sanskrit word is prayaschitta, or atonement, or if you've done this, you have to do this to counterbalance it. If you've done this impious act, you have to do that to counterbalance it. So Prabhupada, so he's saying that if we don't counteract the impious activities, we have to suffer in these hellish conditions that I've described, now Prabhupada's purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that although Maharaj Prickett was a pure devotee, Sukadev Goswami did not immediately speak to him about the strength of devotional service, because he's told him something else. He's told him you have to perform the Vedic ritualistic activities that will counterbalance one by one the sinful activities you perform. So Prabhupada in his purport is quoting Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur saying, he's quoting Bhagavad Gita, Mam chayo vivacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. That if one performs devotional service, unceasing devotional service, bhakti yogena sevate, sagunan, one goes above the modes of material nature and reaches the platform, the spiritual platform. So devotional service is so strong, Prabhupada continues to say, that if one fully surrenders to Krishna, that means gives ourselves fully to Krishna. Mamekam sharanam braja, Tvam sarva papabhyo, all sarva papabhyo, all sinful activities. Remove masucha, don't worry, don't fear, don't hesitate. So if one fully gives himself to Krishna, places himself in Krishna's hands, the reactions of his sinful life immediately stop. So this atonement level is a counterbalance level on the level of karma kanda, on the level of fruit of activities to make us enjoy. This is fruit of activity to counterbalance the impious activities. Text 8. Therefore, before one's next death comes, it's interesting even to hear it spoken like that, before one's next death comes, what is implied within that? That this hasn't been the only one. Because if there's a next of something, it implies there were previous somethings, previous deaths, and previous births, and previous deaths, countless deaths and births. Therefore, before one's next death comes, as long as one's body is strong enough, one should quickly adopt the process of atonement according to Shastra. Otherwise, one's time will be lost, and the reactions of his sin will increase. As an expert physician diagnoses and treats a disease according to its gravity, one should undergo atonement according to the severity of one's sins. So if one has a dangerous disease, one has to undergo very, very heavy treatment. And if one has a light disease, light, you know, some just a slight change of diet, don't eat this for 2 days and you'll be okay. Stand out in the sun for some time. So So similarly, if one has committed horrendous, horrible sins, then very, very heavy atonement is required to remove the reaction of that sin. And if one has committed simpler, more innocent sins with knowledge of what one's doing, maliciously, sadistically causing pain to others, like sometimes people get tortured, that means that there are people who get pleasure from torturing others. Horrible, most horrible thing, cutting them open before they even kill them, they'll torture them. So how, because of just killing them, then it's over quickly. They want them to suffer. So how much these animal-like persons will have to suffer for this? So according to the severity of one's sins, then one has to take some atonement. Now here is Maharaj Prickett's reply. One may know that a sinful activity is injurious for him because he actually sees that a criminal is punished by the government and rebuked by people in general, and because he hears from scriptures and learned scholars that one is thrown into hellish conditions in the next life for committing sinful acts. Nevertheless, in spite of such knowledge, one is forced to commit sins again and again, even after performing acts of atonement. Therefore, what is the value of such atonement? What an intelligent point! One commits a sin, and then one atones, and one sins again, and one atones, and one hears from the scriptures that if you commit this horrible act, you will get such and such reaction. And when we read about the hells in the fifth canto, we may begin to shake and shiver, and fear enters our hearts. And we see the suffering of others. And yet, when the mood is correct in our heart, we'll do the same thing. After all of that, after hearing, after seeing, Arjuna asked Krishna this question, Atakeno priyaptoyam papam chariti purusha anicham varshaya baladivana yojita. What is it? What is that force that pushes a man, even unwillingly, to act sinful, improperly, horribly even, against his own better judgment, against his own desires? What forces one to act sinfully? And Krishna's answer is kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samudbhava. This is lust, the force, the power of passion turned into anger when unsatisfied, when one's desires are unsatisfied, that passion turns to anger. Mahashano mahapatma. This is the shano, this is the great enemy, great source of sin. Vidyanam yavarinam. Intelligent person should avoid this out of passion. So he's saying atonement that removes the reaction to the sin without removing the true cause of the sin is incomplete. Why? Because you'll just do it again. His guru has told them, he said, how can people get saved from suffering, from hell? And he said, perform atonement. And he says, no, that doesn't seem right, because it doesn't truly get one free from hell. Because the desires will still be in the heart. As long as the desire to enjoy, to be the center of existence, selfishness, is in the heart, then it is sure and certain that it's just a matter of time, due to the modes of nature, of passion, before we commit a sinful activity that sends us to hell and suffering. So what is the value of such pious citta? What is the value of such atonement? So I've heard Prabhupada lecture on this, and he appreciates this question very much. Very intelligent disciple of the spiritual master. thoughtfully considered. So he says, what is the value of such atonement? And I'll read the final verse that we'll read today, and then I'll read the two purports with these two verses. Sometimes, Prakrit Maharaj continues, one who is very alert so as not to commit sinful acts is victimized by sinful life again. I therefore consider this process of repeated sinning and atoning to be useless. It is like the bathing of an elephant, kunjara shochavat. For an elephant cleanses itself by taking a full bath, goes in the water, and he takes his trunk and he fills himself up with water, and then he sprays it all over himself and cleans himself very thoroughly like that. But then when he comes out of the water, what does he do? He throws dust over its head and body as soon as he returns to land. So this is kunjara socharat, an elephant's bathing. So someone who commits a sin and then atones, as soon as he's finished his atonement, he commits another selfish, sinful act. Because the heart, those desires are still sitting within the heart. Like the bathing of an elephant. Here's Prabhupada's comments, purport. In some religious sects, a sinful man goes to a priest to confess his sinful acts and pay a fine. But then again, he commits the same sins and returns to confess them again. This is the practice of a professional sinner. Prakrit Maharaj's observations indicate that even 5,000 years ago, it was the practice of criminals to atone for their crimes, but then commit the same crimes again, as if forced to do so. Therefore, owing to his practical experience, Prakrit Maharaj saw that the process of repeatedly sinning and atoning is pointless. Regardless of how many times he is punished, one who is attached to sense enjoyment will commit sinful acts again and again until he is trained to refrain from enjoying his senses. The word vivasa is used herein, indicating that even one who does not want to commit sinful acts will be forced to do so by habit. Prakrit Maharaj therefore considered the process of atonement to have little value for saving one from sinful acts. In the following verse, he further explains his rejection of this process. So that was the kunjara sochavat, the bathing of the elephant verse. We'll read Prabhupada's short purport to that verse. When Prakrit Maharaj inquired how a human being could free himself from sinful activities so as not to be forced to go to hellish planetary systems after death, Sukadeva Goswami answered that the process of counteracting sinful life is atonement. In this way, Sukadeva Goswami tested the intelligence of Maharaj Prakrit, who passed the examination by refusing to accept this process, the process of prayaschitta, the process of atonement, as genuine. Now Prakrit Maharaj is expecting another answer from his spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami. So if Krishna allows, tomorrow Sukadeva will deepen his answer. Explain further what is the process of not only atonement but removing that desire from the heart. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Yes. I'm trying to keep my house clean. Kill perhaps or maim flies and cockroaches and maybe ants and things like that. I don't think I do them from my karma.
Malice,
yeah.
It's not malice.
But I do them all the same because I want to keep the place...
Unavoidable.
Yes and no. I mean, if an ant's on me, I can walk outside and try and find where it came from. If I flip it off, basically, it's probably going to die.
Yes.
So I'm making a deliberate...
But what are you going to do about breathing and stepping?
I can't do anything about that, but there are sort of conscious decisions I can make.
Yes.
I'm trying to
decrease.
Now, from what I understand, is that each time I destroy this life or maim this life,
yes,
I'm building up some future detriment to myself.
Yes.
And if I don't manage to become a good enough devotee, then basically I'm going to have to suffer for that.
True.
There seems to be a differentiation between being driven to do impious acts, and by maintaining oneself, one creates impious acts.
Yes, to eat.
Yeah.
Most likely, using fire kills. One can't truly be non-violent in this world. So it's like your house, that you don't have to try to make it dusty and dirty. It happens naturally, automatically, just by the forces of nature in the world, forcing you to clean them. So similarly, just existing in this world causes the heart to become dirty and dusty. So in a pious culture, a dharmic religious culture, part of living is counteracting that. Just like part of keeping a house is cleaning it, because it's going to naturally get dirty. It has to get dirty. So similarly in this world, a pious person will naturally counteract not only will he not act cruelly, maliciously, a pious person couldn't do that actually, but he'll naturally perform counterbalancing religious activities on the Dharma level for this. But Prickett Maharaj wants something deeper, and Sukadeva Goswami wants to speak something deeper to get to the heart of the problem, the essence of our being in the material world, how to remove the essence of the ultimate cause of the situation. So what you said, the last part of what you said was, if I don't become a good enough devotee, I'm going to have to suffer for that. But when one is sincerely trying to become a devotee, he's placing himself somewhat in Krishna's hands. He's placing himself in Krishna's hands, even though it may not be fully. And then when one does that, one doesn't actually directly suffer karma in the same way that one who's not one who's giving himself to God suffers karma. But there's a mixture of karma and Krishna applying that karma. So one has one's karma, but Krishna applies it in such a way that one can come closer to him. So a devotee seeing Krishna in his life working, minimizing his karma, and giving him all the breaks that are possible, and acting in such a way, organizing such a thing that seemingly it's suffering, but that suffering is like someone beating us, but that beating and hitting us with a stick is driving us through the gate of the prison to freedom. So a devotee, due to the depth of his devotion, and this is actually a very elevated devotee, sees that. He sees the slapping and punching and kicking and hitting of material nature to be his karma, but he sees Krishna applying that in such a way that it is pushing him out of the material world. There's one verse in the Bhagavatam, Harishya Tadanam Sanai, that Prabhupada used to quote, that when Krishna takes everything away, even, that's his special mercy on someone. So for a materialist, when he loses everything, he wants to die. Because he's lost all his possessions, he's lost his position, he's been insulted, or he says, I'm not going to be defeated, I'm going to go and back get them again. But Prabhupada used to quote this verse, even pertaining to his own life, how he saw Krishna would not let him materially succeed on a particular level to make him more and more dependent. Him meaning Prabhupada, more and more dependent on Krishna. And we saw the ultimate result of that. So it's not exactly, if I don't become a good enough devotee, I'm just going to have to suffer detrimental pain for that. How what we do in our insincerities is applied to us is between us and Krishna. It's up to Krishna how he deals with each and every one of us. It's not mechanical, any longer, as the modes of material nature are mechanical.
If I can just try and understand what you said, basically by me keeping the house clean, killing a few cockroaches and flies, because I'm a devotee, trying to be a devotee of chanting Hare Krishna, and Hare Dasa course is, I'm liberated if I chant Hare Krishna, then I will not suffer the sinful reactions for killing those flies.
Not in the same way as a person who is not a devotee of God, and I mean that in a non-sectarian way, will suffer, yes.
But suffering is there to some degree, perhaps?
But it's like the example that Prabhupada gave on that. But the suffering is like the driving you out. The example he gave on that is that a cat carries a mouse in his mouth, and it means death. And when he carries his kitten in its mouth, it's a loving embrace. So the devotee is like the kitten. So it's so a devotee isn't exactly under the material nature, and one can question naturally, well, what level of devotee is not exact. What level of the chant have to carry to Krishna once or twice or seven times, or how sincere do you have to be on this, on the all sincerity scale? But that's up to Krishna to decide. And he, from my understanding, he's quite liberal about that. But it's not that we don't suffer. It's not that the material nature doesn't exactly we're free from material nature, but it's really under the control of Krishna at that point. Like it's like when the king's son, he's done something. Well, not the king, it's not a proper example, wouldn't happen. But someone is put into prison who's a close friend of the king. And he may be in the prison and things are happening to him, but there's some different. The king's keeping a special eye on him and making sure that things go right for him and to gain him an early release. It's something like that. So a devotee, I've seen this even myself, and other people have told me, you know, different times we we're not as sincere as other times. Sometimes we want to escape Krishna like that, and yet we find that Krishna's following us, and every once in a while he just there's a little tap on the shoulder, and you just wake up, there's something that Krishna's hand is still there. He has his eye on me. Yes? Never admit it, huh? Oh, yes, it has. And it's sometimes after a while you're not aware that it happens, but then when you look back in retrospect, you see that it's always happened. Like the son of the rich man who's run away and he's living in the street as if he was a poor person. But the father has his way of keeping his eye out for him. And from the son's point of view, he says, I'm poor like all these other people. But there's a big difference, a very big difference.
Now, my question is on the process of inquiry that we should have.
The
process of inquiry, in the sense that, just like if I ask you something,
yes,
you'll tell me an answer. Yeah. I should have full faith that whatever you've told me is complete.
As long as I'm saying from Shastra, it's not me who's talking, from what I've heard from Prabhupada.
But then, it's like when Parikshit Maharaj has questions,
yes,
Sukadeva Goswami. And Sukadeva Goswami has given an answer about atonement. he has questioned his answer.
Yes.
So
is that proper or improper? It's always proper. But eventually, one has to stop. In other words, one has to adjust one's mentality. But if one doesn't understand or thinks it's something else, and how is that true? One should ask, but one doesn't ask in a challenging way. He didn't actually ask in a challenging way. He asked in a humble way. So one of the difference is one asked to clarify one's understanding as opposed to proving the speaker wrong or like that. That's the mood that a disciple has. To clarify one's own understanding. But yes, if one doesn't understand how is this really a fact, one should ask. And one shouldn't be a blind follower. I'm not allowed to question because the speaker just said it. One shouldn't be like that. Because then what will happen is so many doubts will just sit in our heart. So to have someone who's deep enough to answer legitimate questions and deepen legitimate questions and to clarify things for us is very fortunate, actually.
So when we said that, when we're told that we should study with a scrutinizing way, it's whenever we have doubts, we should clear. Is that the meaning?
Questions. It means our intelligence should be active. Shouldn't be. We can hear submissively, but we shouldn't hear in a dull way. We should try to understand the meaning deeply, and we should take what's been said and see how it fits in with everything else that we've heard. And that's what Prigit Maharaj has done. He's fitted into what else he's heard and what else he knows. We should read and study with our intelligence active. What is my understanding of this? What are other examples of this? How does this fit with other things that I've heard? Do I really believe this? If not, why not? Yes, we should be active, but we shouldn't be. It doesn't work if we're really challenging either, you know. Pariprasnena sevaya, with respect, with questions, and with service. That's the way to get the most from an exalted guru. Okay. So tomorrow we'll hear the next level of the reply of Sukadev Goswami to Maharaj Prigit, a very qualified disciple and a very qualified teacher. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sukadev Goswami ki jai, Maharaj Prigit ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivedanta ki jai.